You're listening to Track Talk with CH and Ferdy.
Check, check, check. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2. In the place to be. It's Track Talk with CH and Ferdy. That was rhyming. Bars. Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 5, Track Talk with CH and Ferdy. I am Coach Harris. And I'm Ferdy, the man of many words. We want to welcome y'all back on this wonderful, lovely evening for episode 5. We're going to talk about veteran athletes today. Let me kill this music a little bit real quick. All right. Today, we're going to talk about veteran athletes. All right. In the past, we've talked about what new athletes can expect, what new coaches can expect. Now, let's talk about what the veteran athletes have to expect. You know, we want to talk about, you know, those who are coming out. And they might have been leaders in the past. They might be the ones that are on the verge of becoming leaders. You know, how are they at a competition level with, you know, those in their area? How are they at a competition level when, you know, somebody on the team shows up that, you know, might challenge, you know, their position? Different things we want to dive into on this episode. And it's definitely going to be informative for all those new athletes. Not the new athletes are eventually going to become veteran athletes. So this will be good for you guys as well to listen to. So anything you want to drop in there real quick?
Nah, I think we could just talk about it.
All right.
Pretty much, I think one of the first things a veteran athlete needs to understand is that whether or not they're a captain, they're still a leader because they've been there. And especially if you've had a coach, how to put it, as long as you've had like similar coaches throughout the years.
Continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you can understand what they're going to do, so that way you can help the younger athletes to understand the methods and the training process that goes on. That way they don't feel as lost as they could be. I know as a veteran athlete, when I ran, I should say, I'm not an athlete anymore.
After elite.
Age crept up on me. I tended to, you know, work with the other new athletes. I also, you know, because on my team we only had one coach, that one coach could be everywhere for so long. So, you know, I'd take people under my wing in a sense. It kind of helped me become a coach in that sense, because it just, while I still didn't understand back then the training methods or anything that was going on, I understood what it was to help someone out and just direct them to whatever they needed to be directed to.
Yeah. And I know, coming from a coaching standpoint, I like to look at my veteran athletes as an extension of me. So, like Furry just said, sometimes it's good to use your veteran athletes that first couple days of practice when you're doing the warm-ups. These athletes have been doing the warm-ups, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 years. You know, if you have those athletes who've been running since 7th grade, have been selectively classified, this could be their 6th year with you in your program doing these same drills. Or even if you've changed drills, they know the changes, so they're still comfortable with, you know, how the practice runs. You know, sometimes it's good to pair a veteran athlete up with a new athlete, so that even though you're demonstrating and trying to walk people through the drills, they have somebody that's a peer, you know, so to speak, on the team that's been there that can show them the drill. You know, a veteran athlete doesn't always have to be a senior. Like I said, you have your selectively classified athletes. It could be a freshman who's been running since 7th grade who could be considered a veteran athlete that knows, the rituals and the routines of the practice that can help out those other athletes. You know, they're the ones that can lead the warm-ups eventually, so that, you know, once everything's set in place and you're about 2 weeks in, the veterans can lead the warm-ups. You know, the veterans can lead the cool-downs, you know, the team stretching at the end, you know, cool-down laps, things of that nature. So it's a good tool for coaches to have, especially if, like Ferdy said, if you're challenged with the amount of coaches you have on your staff where you might have to be in multiple places at once. Those veteran athletes you can trust can be the ones to say, okay, we're doing this today. I'll be over in a second, but just get them started doing this. And it helps to make your practices flow a lot smoother, you know.
Yeah, and there's a couple different kinds of veteran athletes that I've noticed, you know, through my time in track and field. There are those veteran athletes who primarily lead by example.
Yep.
They don't really talk much, but you can tell what they're doing by their work ethic, and people follow along with that, especially if they're a really good athlete.
Yeah.
Then you have the other ones who are more vocal and more
take charge.
They can also be cheerleaders too. You know, when it comes to like a practice, and I see it a lot with that, more with the distance runners.
Yeah.
I think that being a cheerleader in the sprint is a little tough because you only run for a few seconds. But
yeah.
You know, when you're doing tempo runs or fartleks or whatever, distance running, I think there's a level of cheerleading that can happen, and it usually occurs from the veteran athletes who understand the motivation, that the little extra motivation that's needed to get through a rep, to get through a set, to get through a workout.
Definitely.
And it also translates to the meets.
Yes, definitely.
You know, especially if you're running different events, you know, you have your veteran athletes cheering you on, and I think for the new athletes, that's a great boost of morale because, you know, hey, I'm actually a part of a team. It's probably what they're thinking, and you know, people actually really care, and it's not just the coaches who are cheering. It's, you know, your teammates as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely makes, you know, people feel a lot, you know, more inclusive with the whole team concept because, you know, you're coming in as a new athlete. You know, you have these veteran athletes that know what they're doing. They've been, you know, they know the ropes. They've been there. They've done that. But yet they're cheering you on, and you're just brand new. You don't really know what's going on yet. So that's definitely, you know, something that's reassuring. It's team building. It pushes everybody to do better. It brings everybody closer together. I can't talk today. And eventually, you know, it can rub off on them as they get older, because if they continue on with the program, they become the veteran leaders. So it's almost like a learning by example, so to speak. Because what I like to see in my programs is eventually my juniors and my seniors are going to graduate. But that doesn't mean that, you know, everything stops when my veterans graduate, because my veterans need to be replaced by future veterans. So when the veterans are, you know, cheering on the rookies and the newbies and all that, when they're showing them the ropes and they're showing them the drills and they're kind of outlining how practice should go, how meets should go, when they're leading by example, how practice should go, you know, what type of intensity you should have at practice at a meet, you know, that there's a trickle-down effect. So if we have good team leaders, whether they're captains or not, they can just be team leaders without being a captain, you know, that can trickle down, and that's the type of thing that keeps your program sustaining, you know, year after year after year. You know, the willingness and the want to do work and to push each other, because a lot of times in practice, you know, your teammates are your biggest competition. You only have 1 to 2 meets a week, but you're with your teammates every week. So if you have those teammates that can push you and motivate you positively, it just makes everything better. And then that trickle-down effect is how you see these teams, especially like in college. You see these teams where eventually, you know, you got kids coming in and out. Some kids leave early because they go pro. But that culture of, you know, excellence, of working hard, of camaraderie, of leadership and motivation trickles down, and it sustains your program. That's why you see teams like Arkansas with multiple national championships. That's why you may have teams in your local area at the high school level who have multiple, you know, sectional team titles and county titles, because that trickle-down effect, you know, it's something powerful. It can also have a negative effect if you have terrible leaders. And I'm pretty sure, you know, we've seen that before. You have that one person who just, they may be a very good athlete, but their work ethic sucks. And
yeah,
that can work as a trickle-down effect as well.
You know, it's funny. We had one of those when I was in high school. You know, his weight training routine would be grab a couple dumbbells and swing his arms. He was the fastest one on the team. He made states. He medaled, and, you know.
So everybody else is going to probably just grab a dumbbell and
swing. We weren't that stupid. Like, you know, I had to work.
Yeah.
I wasn't that gifted. I mean, I don't know. I just always thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you get some bad athlete. I mean, yeah, you give people...
Say it.
I don't like them.
Yeah.
Not that they're... That's fine that they're gifted, but the lazy factor that sometimes comes into it,
yeah.
it just can rub off on other athletes as well, and, you know, kind of the opposite of the good things we were talking about.
Exactly.
This is also a lead by example. You know, someone's lazy. I want to be lazy too. It's just practice. It's after school. I'm just doing this because I want to. It's not a job. Like, I think that's kind of where the mindset goes, or it can also be, well, I don't know, my leg hurts, so I'm not going to do it today, or whatever that it is. Except
I did shoulders yesterday, and my shoulders are sore, so I can't practice today, even though your shoulders are probably supposed to be sore.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, but it's like with the leg thing. It's like, okay, you have two legs. Two, there's multiple parts to your legs. Give me something. If something actually hurts, I'll find something else for you to do.
Yeah.
But nah. So...
And if this is your veteran athlete and your younger athletes are looking at this, you might, what's the term I'm looking for? You might harness and channel some negative energy from a potential future lazy athlete. Well, yeah, they're not doing anything, and so I'm not going to do anything either. Or then you get the other side of it where you have the athlete that wants to work hard. They're that not veteran, non-veteran athlete. They're looking for direction, but they're getting bad direction from their leaders, so they're like, well, that's not fair. You know, just because he's good or she's good, they think they don't have to do anything. So then you have dissension in your program, and that's not good as well, because now you're coaching multiple teams within one team when you should just have one whole team, you know. And I don't mean multiple teams as far as, like, training groups. I'm not talking about sprinters and jumpers and hurdlers and distance. I'm talking about people who are being lazy versus people who want to work hard and them not liking each other. When you don't have that chemistry and that camaraderie in your team, it can trickle into your performances in the meets, and then you start to see that decline, because people start to become selfish. They just start doing things for themselves. Well, they're not going to work hard. I'm just going to work on my event and my event only. I don't care about them. I'm not trying to do a relay. I don't care about winning this meet. I don't care about this, that, or that. And then when you get a whole bunch of I don't care going through your team, it becomes a nasty, vicious cycle. So we always want to try and make sure we keep that positive. We try and nip that in the bud as early as possible. It's funny because I just had a conversation with my team the other day where I work with predominantly with the sprinters. Sprinters, long sprinters, some mid-distance, you know, 4-8 runners. The hurdlers when they're not hurdling. Jumpers when they're not with their jump coach. That group all comes to me on strictly just running days. So, we know how it is with high school kids. Some really want to lift. Some... I'll lift, but I don't really want to lift a lot. Some hate the weight room completely and just don't want to touch anything. So I had to stress the importance that you don't just get faster by running and you don't just get stronger by lifting weights. You know, the two have to work together. You know, the workouts have to match each other. So if you're doing a power day and speed day on the track, you want to do power in the weight room. If you're doing more of a speed endurance based, you want to, you know, do more bodybuilding in the weight room. You know, that type of thing. So your workouts match. They complement each other, so you can recover fast, you can get stronger, so you're generating more power. But that goes in the ears, one in one ear and out the other when you're talking to high school kids. So yeah. It was basically to the point I had to tell them, like, look, okay, when we have weight room scheduled on our workout, it is not, you know, optional. It is mandatory. So therefore, if you do not want to work out, if you want to go to the weight room and you want to sit around and just look at your phone or talk to people and listen to music, or you want to somehow just sneak out of the weight room 5 minutes in and then reappear a half hour later and haven't done anything, you won't be in my group. And no, I won't send you to the distance group. I will send you home.
Yeah, it's not like a stop sign in Puerto Rico. Meaning, when you go to Puerto Rico and you drive around, you'll know that a stop sign is just a suggestion more than a mandatory rule.
And for anybody who feels offended, he is Puerto Rican. He can say that. Just throwing it out there.
That's all good. I'm sure it happens in other Caribbean at other countries as well. I think in the Dominican Republic as well. That was a nightmare.
And another thing, my wife and I went to Puerto Rico for our honeymoon. I can vouch for the same. So we both we both can say that. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Oh, man. I was scared when the taxi driver was taking red light.
I was scared when, like, there was a truck coming at us, and we were in the van, and the driver was like, no, it's good. I got it, because I'm going. I get it, dude, but we're in here, too.
All right.
If you're going, we're going, but we don't have a choice. You do.
Yeah, you ever was on a road where it was on a cliff, but there wasn't a barrier?
Nah, but I've heard about that from my wife in Jamaica. She heard it's crazy. And they be hitting them corners.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. We digress, but
as we digress.
You know, that's scary.
Yeah.
Don't need to see those again.
Yeah. But anyway, basically, back to the weight room. You know, I had that talk with my team, and I noticed that, you know, the mindset and the effort and everything improved a little bit. Is it going to be perfect? No, but it definitely showed. I've definitely seen a lot of improvement since I had that one talk, you know. And not to mention, a lot of my veteran leaders helped spearhead that, because now they're going around, you know, motivating people to make sure they're doing their work, you know. Working out with people. Okay, we have a specific circuit that we do on certain days. So on speed days, we do a power circuit. On our secondary speed day, we do a static circuit. On our speed endurance days, we do a bodybuilding circuit. And there's lots of different exercises in there that somebody who's in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade may have never seen before, depending on what sport they came from, if they're coming from another sport. So having those veteran athletes there to show them, okay, this is how we do it. You know, this is the proper form. Obviously the ones that do have good form that you've already screened, because just because that you have a veteran athlete doesn't always mean that they know exactly what they're doing everything. So you want to make sure you screen who's training who and showing who the ropes. But, you know, it was definitely helpful and beneficial to have those veterans step in and kind of enhance the statement that I made. You know, and like I said in the beginning of this podcast, like, be an extension of me, you know, be an extension of, you know, the philosophy that I'm trying to push, be an extension of, you know, trying to instill the importance of what we're trying to do. And when young athletes see veteran athletes working out, working hard, regardless if they're a captain or not, you know, those younger athletes have their eyes on them for direction, for leadership, you know, whether the older veteran athletes know it or not, you know. So we try and let them know, you may not be a captain, you may not feel like you're a leader, but you're a leader whether you know it or not, because somebody on this team is looking to you for direction. It might just be somebody in your training group. You might be a 10th grader who's been running since 7th grade. You may not be a team captain. You might not be that vocal, but you might be a hard worker. So somebody that's in your training group, whether it be distance group, they might want to run with you because, you know, they want you to push them. You know, if you're in the sprint group, they might want to lift with you. If you're hurdling, they might want to hurdle with you because, you know, you motivate them, you push them. They want to, you know, be where you're at and everything like that. And sometimes you're non-vocal, you know, hard-working veteran athletes may seem more approachable than your more vocal ones. The more vocal ones sometimes may be intimidating. So it's good to have that balance of, you know, different character types on your team with your veteran athletes, especially if you have a large team, you know. What do you think about that, sir?
You're right. You're right. I'm looking at our bullet points here. Excuse me. I need to have the mic on my face there. The athlete that works too hard, because I was thinking about that as far as the leading by example thing.
Yeah.
That's also, besides the lazy athlete, the one that works too hard
could be just as bad.
Yeah, because that's definitely a thing. The problem. It's the idea is not necessarily work harder, it's work smarter. Everything has to be done in a certain way that will enhance your performance later on, and especially when we're looking to quote-unquote peak at the end of the season. When you work too hard, that usually means the athletes or whoever isn't giving their body enough time to recover.
Yeah, veteran athletes are talking to you right now directly.
Yeah. You need to when a coach tells you, all right, stop.
Stop.
That's exactly what that means.
Yeah.
I've definitely won. You know, you can, if you get through the whole workout, great. There have been many times where I've had to stop an athlete from finishing a workout just based on what I see, whether their running mechanics are getting
shattered.
Worse.
Let's keep it real.
Yeah.
Broken down terribly.
Right, that or in weightlifting, if I'm looking for a certain bar speed for, you know, bar speed meaning, let's say if we're doing the power clean, how fast they're moving the bar from their hip to the catch position.
Are you snapping it or are you starting to pull it up?
Yeah, and also I can tell if it's too heavy or too light. I can tell you, hey, take some weight off of the bar.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't like that. But they don't understand that I'm protecting them from getting hurt.
Exactly.
That's basically what the working too hard does. Work too hard, you just gain injuries.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you have to look at it like this. And we've said this before. Track and field is a performance-based sport. You need to be at your peak performance for that specific amount of time that your event takes. If it's shot put, each throw is probably going to take, depending on if you're doing a glide or a rotation, whether it be the shot, the disc, or the weight throw. You're in that circle 20 seconds, and that's including, you know, when you walk in, you get set, and then you actually make your attempt. The actual attempt itself is probably going to take 3 to 5 seconds, depending. Shot might be like 2 to 3. Depending on your approach.
With the screen.
Yeah. The weight throw and the discus might be 5 to 7 seconds, depending on your rotations and all of that. You don't need to be in the weight room for 6 hours for 3 5 to 7 second attempts. You know, you need to make sure you're working smartly so that you have the recovery time to properly deliver that top peak throw for 5 to 7 seconds 3 times or 4 times, or if you're in the final and you make to the finals in 6 times, depending on how many throws. You know, working too hard could also be, I talked about this with another coach the other day, it's funny, those hurdlers that go to the track meet and they put those hurdles out there and they're doing like 72 starts over 3 hurdles before they run the 55 hurdles. There's only 5 hurdles in the race. You're doing starts over 3 hurdles for 45 minutes straight.
Yeah, just give me 4. I just need 4 starts.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. Over maybe 1 to 2 hurdles. Like, doing the whole race 17 times, that's overkill. Like, you still have to run the race, you know. When we're in practice, you know, that extra rep. Can I do one more rep? How about instead of doing one more rep in the weight room, just add more weight and do the same amount of reps? You know, instead of doing 135 in the bench, add a 5 each side. Do 145 this time. Do the same amount of reps, but just add a little bit more weight. That's how you can, you know, work smart but still push yourself. You know, if you want to do an extra rep when you're doing 200-meter repeats, if we're only going, you know, 75%, maybe you just need to up your 75%. Maybe your 75% wasn't really 75%. Maybe you thought you were at 75, you were probably running at like 60. You know, up the intensity a little bit more, you know, per your coach's, you know, suggestions. Of course, don't just go out there and say and guess it. You know, your coach should be helping you try and pace your times and things like that. But, you know, up your intensity of your percentage and things of that nature. You know, doing the same amount of work but upping your intensity. And that's how you work smart. You're not overworking yourself, but you're still pushing yourself. You know, unlike a sport like soccer, where you're playing for an hour straight, depending on how long you're in the game. Basketball, when it's 48 minutes and you're just up and down the court, up and down the court. Football, you know, where you just you take a play to do, you huddle, you go back out, you're doing a play. You go back and huddle, you come out and do a play where you're just constantly playing. Track is not like that. We mentioned in past podcasts, you come out, you do your event, you might have a half hour to 3 hours before your next event, you know. All those extra reps in the weight room aren't necessary if you're doing it properly. You know what I mean? Basically. Work smart, not hard.
Yeah. Because as I mentioned, that can also that leads to injuries.
Yes.
Injuries leads to off days or days off, excuse me. Same thing with those
both
those athletes who are lazy. It leads to days off. So the more days off you have, the more off performances you're gonna have on the track.
Exactly.
And you've seen it time and time again. Hey, they go to the meet and they haven't done anything. Look at the times. Mm.
Look who's grabbing those hamstrings after they run 1-100 on an 80 degree today.
Like, why are you sore now? But, you know, hey, it's not like, you know, I don't know. Just do as I say.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's not that hard. Actually, I don't really give hard work. I've given hard workouts, but I rarely give hard workouts. They're all manageable and doable.
Exactly.
Especially at the high school setting. You only have so much time to fit things in. So.
And at the high school level, you're going to have that built-in cutoff point where, okay, this might be a monster workout, but it's not a monster workout for a veteran athlete. But you have a drop-off point. So if you're a new athlete, you go up to this point of the workout. Or you might have them start in later so that everybody finishes together. So, you know, there's ways you can have one long workout and cater it to, you know, different training levels. So, you know, we want to make sure we're working smart, not working hard, because recovery is definitely the most important thing. Recovery, recovery, recovery. If you're not recovered, if you're still burnt out from, you know, doing that extra work the day before, it's going to affect that practice tomorrow. It's going to affect that practice 2 days from now. It's going to affect that meet. You know, if you keep trying to, you know, pile on. You know, especially if you're doing extra outside of the practice, unsupervised from your coach. That's another podcast for another day, probably our next podcast. But, you know, that all counts as working too hard. You know, one practice is good enough. You know, going to multiple practices in a week for multiple. When I say multiple practices, I don't mean going Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I mean, Monday you got your team practice and you got another practice after that. Then Wednesday you do the same thing. Tuesday and Thursday you might just have your team practice. But Monday, Wednesday, and Friday you might have double practices. And then your off day on Sunday, you should be resting and not doing anything. You might have another practice or something like that.
Or soccer game. I don't know.
Lacrosse. You know, AAU basketball. You know, all these things. You know, I mean, anything that's extra, like, realistically, you should be doing one sport at a time, you know.
Yeah.
Think about it like this. It's not fair to either sport. It's not fair to your school sport. It's not fair to your club sport. You know, somewhere in the middle, somebody's going to suffer, and more than likely, it's going to be you.
Yeah.
You know. And,
Actually, just to quickly, just to switch topics a bit.
Yeah.
How a veteran athlete should react to a new coach coming in. And I don't mean like a new head coach. I mean, yeah, we could talk new head coach or something.
Yeah, because that does happen.
But let's say, I don't know, next week a new coach is coming in to help out with a certain event that they probably haven't had experience with. What should the reaction be, or what could they expect?
Well, I'd say like this, from experience, and having A, been that coach, B, been the coach to actually bring one of those new people in, or bring new people in. Put it like this, if you're a veteran athlete and you've been around the system for a while, and you trust your coaches, you should trust their decisions if they're, you know, if they have a hands-on and bringing somebody new in. You know, if they're bringing somebody new in, they're not trying to just drag somebody off the street. Hey, we need an extra babysitter. Unfortunately, sometimes it may happen. But if you know your coaches and you trust your coaches and you know they had a hand in bringing the person in, you know, just you got to have a little bit of trust and a little bit of faith in your coaches, you know. For the most part, we're trying to bring in somebody that's going to help. Like I said, the more coaches you have for different events, when you have a large team, the better output you're going to get from your athletes. You know, you're not going to have those athletes that feel neglected. You know, you can lean on your your team captains and your veteran leaders less, so that they can act. Because at the end of the day, yeah, we want our leaders to lead. We want them to work, you know, lead and be vocal and lead by example. But at the end of the day, they're on the team too. They wanna do their workout. They wanna get better as well. You know, they're not there to show everybody else the ropes only. They want to show everybody else the ropes so that they can learn and they can get to doing what they need to do, because they need just as much attention as the person who just started as well. Especially if they're like on the verge of, you know, cracking into qualifying for sectionals. Maybe there's somebody who's regularly qualifying for sectionals, but they're ready to make that breakthrough to states. Maybe they're being scouted by a D2 or D1 college and they're ready to, you know, hit those qualifying standard times for a scholarship. But they need just as much attention as the new kid who does not know what he's doing, has no clue what she's doing. You know, they all need equal attention for different reasons. So, you know, when we bring those new coaches in, think of it as, okay, if now I have a jumps coach, my sprint coach doesn't have to work with jumpers and sprinters, so that one day, okay, the jumpers getting all attention, sprinters are just on their own, and hey, we don't know what to do, and nobody's focusing because you're not over here, or vice versa, when, you know, your coach is working with the sprinters and the jumpers are just hanging out in the sand, throwing dirt and not really working because they don't have anybody, you know, to motivate them. That's a lot of time we want to bring in extra coaches. You know, in the perfect world, every team could have 8 coaches. You know, you have a head coach for each gender. You have your jumps coach. You have your throwers coach. You have your hurdles coach. You have your vault coach. You know, you have your coach that just manages that, you know, like a lot of the administrative things and everything. That's in a perfect world. But, you know, unfortunately, we understand every program can't be like that. When your program does get somebody new in addition to, you know, take that as a blessing, because, you know, if you're getting a new coach and you're not losing anybody, that can only be beneficial. Even if that coach may not be as good as you think they are, at least it's an extra coach. Now, if you have the situation where that coach is replacing somebody else, you also have to look at it like this. It may not be the coach you're used to. The coach you might have built, you know, a great relationship with the coach you had in that position, whether it be head coach, position coach, whatever. But if that coach is no longer there, at least you still have somebody to fill that void that's gone. It may not be the exact same thing. It could be better, it could be worse, but at least you have somebody to fill that void. So always come in with a positive mindset, with an open mindset. You know, don't say, oh, well, I'm not doing that because we used to do this with the other coach. Just, you know, kind of like, you know, be friendly and kind of suggest like, well, our other coach used to what do you think about this? Because our other coach used to have us do this, and this is why we did it. You know, ask questions. You know, have a conversation. Don't just say, oh, I don't want to do this because, and be defiant, because then you're just starting off on the wrong foot. And at the end of the day, that's going to affect your season, because if this coach is truly here to help you and you're being defiant and bucking the system, you're not going to get the help you need, and you're going to be worse off than you thought you would have been working with that person. So, you know, always have an open mind when you have somebody new coming in, you know, because a lot of this stuff is about relationships. If you build a good relationship in the beginning, that's going to help make things great throughout the rest of the season. If you start off on a bad foot and that first impression is a negative one, you only get one chance to make your first impression. Just remember that. So,
yeah, I just think it's everyone, and by everyone I mean every coach, has a different coaching style. I tend to lean a lot on the science and speak on the reasoning we're doing things based on what the science dictates.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I do that to make them confused, so that way they don't question me anymore. Alright? Because I can take it to that point. I mean, I'll gladly answer any question if they have more questions.
Yeah,
I'll gladly answer.
And there's a time when, you know, you're getting questions asked because, you know, they want to know the answer. They're really intrigued. There's also a time when you're getting questions asked because they're just trying to delay the inevitable of doing the actual workout. You know, stalling questions.
Yep.
I think those people he's trying to confuse.
Yeah. Then
shut up and run.
Yeah. So, I think sometimes I feel that when, let's say I show up and I start doing my thing or talking that way, I think sometimes athletes are taken aback to it, but they listen in a different way than they would a different coach.
Yeah.
I also have another part to it where I'll speak a lot early, and then I won't really say anything while they're doing their repetitions for whatever it is. A lot of times, I can't give, for reasons related to motor learning, it's not ideal to give feedback every rep or every motion. Whatever I'm trying to say there.
Well, yeah. Sometimes you don't want to interrupt. Sometimes you're watching the whole picture instead of trying to pick out points.
Yeah, and sometimes I'm just not watching. So
yeah.
I can't.
Especially if you have a big team.
Oh, listen. There are many times I have not paid attention to what's going on. Like, oh, like someone will come up to me. Hey, how was that? I didn't see it.
Coach, you see my start? There were like seven of you running at the same time.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Especially when like we would have track meets and have multiple people in each heat.
Yeah.
I don't know what you did.
I'm at the finish line trying to get your time.
That's why I videotape. Then I can look at it, look back at it.
Yeah.
And then I can figure out from there. Otherwise, yeah. Actually, at that point, I already know what your issues are anyways.
Yeah.
And I'll just repeat that back to you. Otherwise, that's what the camera's for. I actually don't take time because I'm horrible at it. I can't do it.
A lot of times it's easier in practice to do that because, you know, at the meets are crazy. Everybody's running. You want to make sure you get it, especially at a league meet. You got to hand time everything. At an invitational where everything is FAT, it's a little bit easier because you can actually sit there and just watch starts because you don't care about the time. You'll find it out when it's posted. But when you're at a league meet and you have 70 girls and 50 guys in your team, and then there's like another 80 guys and 78 girls on the other team, and all of this comes together for a track meet, you're just trying to make sure you get time. You're trying to make sure you get everybody through everything, trying to make sure you get everybody through safely and in a timely manner, because it's usually like a Tuesday or Wednesday night when they got school the next day. So a lot of that feedback, sometimes we want to just sit back and observe the entire picture and then come back later and pick out the spots that we can talk about. Sometimes we'll just be taking notes during the meet and, you know, say, okay, I got to make sure I tell this person they got to work on their arms. Okay, I got to make sure I tell this person to get their butt up a little bit higher in their set position in the starts. I got to tell this person to keep their head up when they're running, because every time they put their head down, they're cutting their breathing off. Things like that. But, you know, when we're writing our note down, when you come up to ask us, hey, coach, how was that? We're probably watching the next race already or the next event. So, you know, that's another – I think we said that in another podcast too, why sometimes it's not good for parents to come up and ask questions in the middle of a track meet. Because
get out of my way.
Yeah, we're on to the next race already, because we have to be, because – if we care about every athlete on our team, we need to try and see as much as we can and get as much feedback as we can, you know, and constructive criticism, so we can, you know, help them get better.
And if we have a break, just to go to the potty or eat.
Especially if it's at Hilton, we're getting cheeseburgers all day. Best cheeseburgers in Section 5.
Yeah, when's the Cadet Classic?
That would be May 5th, I believe.
I need a free cheeseburger voucher.
Although I will say Brighton Relays is trying to, you know, come at us on the burger game because they put bacon on theirs.
All right, I'm going to go to Brain.
Yeah.
I think
we're going.
I think I know someone there.
I know a couple people there.
Yeah.
I've already been invited to the burger stand.
Listen,
by a certain coach there.
I just want the free.
Yeah.
I want it for the free. That's how much it costs for me to get in
free
the track meets,
$99.
Too. Except if it's like the Army or something.
Okay. If you dress up like an official or you look like a coach, you
True.
Can get in track meet.
True. I just need a lanyard.
You don't even need a lanyard in outdoor.
Oh, no. Outdoor.
Yeah.
Outdoor.
Indoor meets, you need the lanyard.
Indoor is tough.
Yeah. Indoor, you got to know what entrance the athletes and coaches.
Cornell was the best, though. I knew how to sneak in because there's an underground tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
From the feed house to one across the street.
Yep.
Scary, too, to go through that tunnel. But Yeah, that's how I got in for free. But
a lot of times, if you just walk in and act like you're supposed to be there,
yeah.
Sometimes you have to actually talk to that person at the door and like, hey, how you doing? You talk to them before they talk to you, and just keep on moving. Hey, how you doing, man? Keep it going.
Yeah, I learned that from my high school coach. He's like, listen, Freddie, if you just walk like you know what you're doing, like you know you belong, no one's gonna question
confidence,
you.
Confidence, swag.
All right. Because I think there was a meet. He was walking to the infield, and it was a meet where coaches weren't allowed on the infield.
Yeah.
We just walked through.
I actually did at a boxing match in Rochester when yeah, they had a boxing match at Frontier Field. My cousin and I, we just walked in. We shook the guy at the door's hand. Hey, man, what's going on, man? Good to see you, man. All right. You be easy tonight. Kept it moving.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey.
I need to do that.
Yeah, it works. As we digress again.
Maybe we could do that to get into Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Yeah.
Nah. I doubt that.
I ain't paying $200.
Yeah, I'm just not going. How about I saw Jay-Z in 1998, 8 or 9. It was the Hard Knock Life Tour.
I'm good. I saw that, and I saw Jay-Z on the I Need Better Lighting Tour, a.k.a. Best of Both Worlds Part 2 with R. Kelly. When that all went to,
when R. Kelly said, you know,
my lights, I need my lighting, and you know, and he's trying to steal the show, and
somebody had a gun.
Yeah,
I think it was at the MSG.
Yeah, and then Jay-Z finished the tour by himself.
Hey, he got hits.
It happens. Yeah, we talk about everything on Track Talk, you know, because Jay-Z drops tracks, so it's Track Talk. But anyway,
I mean, we might even do a podcast or two of not track talk.
That's coming up soon. Yeah, that might be one of our next episodes, within an episode, in between, or like I like to say, in betwunts an episode.
Yeah.
So you might get a veteran athletes and then a not track talk, and then we go back to next, you know, episode. So be on the lookout for that. But back to these veteran athletes.
Ooh, what happens when that young stud comes along?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that freshman
that
comes
eighth grader,
in,
that seventh
eighth
grader.
Eighth grader comes like,
that
oh.
That can't transfer from Florida.
Kind of fast.
You know?
Kind of fast. Or Atlanta, Georgia.
That or Texas.
Yeah.
Or that California transfer.
Yeah.
And like, who is this little scraggly, like, eighth grader? And then you have time trials that second week of practice when everybody's still out of shape. And this kid is like, you like, ooh, this going to be a problem.
Yeah, like, as a veteran athlete, maybe they're not beating you, but you know.
You hear that breathing on your shoulder, and it's already week two.
Yeah.
And you like, wait a minute, they a little close, and it's only week two.
Like, I just finished, and she's right there.
I just came back from States and indoor, and they, oh my, hold up.
Yeah.
How do you respond? Hey.
How do you respond?
Like we say, the saying, the famous saying goes, pressure busts pipes, but it also forms diamonds. Are you going to be that busted pipe that you get mad when you see somebody young coming up and oh my God, they're on me, and then you don't want to talk to them, you alienate them, you isolate them, you make fun of them? Or are you going to be that pressure that forms a diamond, and you be like, you know what? I'm going to work with this person because I'm about to graduate soon. But at least when I leave, the program's going to be in good hands. I'm going to show this person the ropes. I'm going to push them to make them better. And in turn, they can make me better as well. And if they happen to run the same event as I do, and our relay might have been struggling a couple years, this mm-hmm. person need to be up on that relay mm-hmm. so we can go to States, mm-hmm. so we can go to Nationals, mm-hmm. so we can break some school records.
Mm-hmm.
Always look at the positives in a situation like that. You know, yes, you want to be the best, but look, there is always somebody out there faster than you, stronger than you, taller than you, wider than you. So
yeah, no, there's a lot of people wider than me.
Yeah,
a lot of people taller than me. That's a fat joke.
he said it. But yeah, use it. Be positive. I mean, I remember my senior year, we had this kid that was, you know, he was starting to kind of clip my heels in the 400. I was happy because I'm like, okay, maybe I can go anchor again in the 4x4. Or maybe I don't have to go anchor. Maybe I can lead off. Now I'm not, like, the one that has to save the relay every time. Now we actually have a decent relay. You know what I mean? Because we've all seen it before. You got that relay where you got that one leg.
One leg.
We just got one more person.
You can have a 4x4, three girls run to 59, and you get that 65, 68 girl coming.
And it's like, do we put her third? Do we put her last and get her a big lead and just have her hold on?
Man,
do we put her first or we just try and catch up?
Can we put a guy in?
Do we hide her in the middle? Do we have our first leg run anchor again and hope nobody notices and say they're twins?
Can we get a gender neutral?
Yeah. Can we get a 2-2, two guys, two girls, and something?
Aren't they doing that? Oh, they're doing that at Nationals.
They do it.
They did that at National and Indoor for high school.
Yeah, and they do it at Junior Worlds too.
Yes.
Yeah, they do the two girl, two guy, 4x4.
Yeah. Cause Sammy was on it.
Yes, they won it. Yep.
Yeah, they did.
Shout out to Sammy Watson.
USA.
She the truth. Represent. But yeah.
She was third at the 800.
At Nationals, right?
Yeah.
A freshman.
All American.
Represent. Freshman. Holding it down. SEC champ. And All American.
Yeah.
Balling.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, how do you think her teammates are responding to her? She's a freshman. She came in. She's the SEC champion.
Yo, I'd be a hater. Like, who are you? Yo, get out of here. Sorry.
I might be a hater at first, but you know what? I'm going to train with her. Because I'm going to be like, hey.
Well, I'm going to have to.
Yeah. Because think about it. If your best competition is literally in practice, either you're going to crumble and be that pipe that gets busted, or you are going to start working a lot harder, pushing yourself, and you're going to get a lot better. You know, sometimes you got to be careful what you ask for. You ask for that, oh, we just had one more leg, and then you finally get it, embrace it, you know. Be happy. Think about the whole team concept. Okay, this person might actually make it easier for y'all to win a team championship. You know, yeah, okay, the accolades are nice if you get individual championships, blah, blah, blah. But if you get that team championship as well, that's just a whole different feeling, and it's a great thing to have, you know. So,
yeah.
And if you care about the school you run at and you care about the program, you'd like to graduate and come back and see that your school is still doing well. Because I know a lot of people that have gone to college and come back and like, hold up, we don't got a team anymore? Mm-hmm. We merged with who?
Mm-hmm.
Where are trophies? They don't have a school record board anymore? Where's our team?
Yeah, like Wilson Magnet and the
School of the Arts, Outdoor
City
team.
Yeah. My old high school does not have a team anymore.
The school I used
Do
to coach at.
Do they have an outdoor team?
No, they're merged with Edison. School of the Arts and Wilson are both merged with Edison.
That is crazy.
And Edison's enrollment is
1,800. You know how much I hated Edison? Just because they were our rivals. It had nothing to do with the individuals.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like them.
Yeah. Rivals were real. Those don't exist anymore because they merge everybody.
Nah, stupid.
You know?
Sorry.
And that's another thing. Going back to the whole new coach thing coming in and how do veteran athletes respond to a new coach. Think about it like that. Some of these programs don't exist anymore. There's teams that actually ran that have Section 5 records in our area in Rochester, New York, that no longer exist. Sometimes I'm not even talking about the team. I'm talking about like the school doesn't exist anymore. So at least you have a coach coming in to keep your program going, you know. Because let's be honest, if there was an abundance of track coaches, these programs wouldn't be disappearing. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I don't even know where I was going with that. I was just I was just talking.
Yeah.
Just to fill time.
I hear you.
I don't know. Where are we?
The young stud comes in to the team.
then we were talking about other schools.
The mergers.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. I mean, as a coach, I've seen the young studs come in from, like, especially in other, from other schools. And I think, there's also that, and not only young, the young good athlete that's coming into your team, but the young athlete that's on someone else's team.
Yeah.
That just comes in and is like, who is this?
It's like that.
You think, like, all right, it's my senior year.
It's my
time
now. I'm
a shoo-in for state.
It's my time now.
Yeah.
So-and-so graduated last year. Mm-hmm. This person playing baseball and outdoor. It's my time. And then this dude that's like a ninth grader or this girl that's like an eighth grader.
It's usually a girl.
Yeah, it's usually a girl.
Guys, they take a little longer to develop, but yeah, it's usually a girl.
I mean, I've seen a couple, though, back in early 2000-teens.
Yeah.
You know. But, yeah. And you just, like, good example. when Maddie Cop, friend of the show, representing Spencerport High School from our area,
Duke
University, when she was graduating, everybody was like, oh, Maddie Cop about to graduate. It's about to be on next year. I'm taking this. And then this girl named Lene Tava Thomas came out of nowhere from Rush Henrietta in the 7th grade. Or was it the 8th grade? I don't know. She seemed like she'd been running forever. 8th grade. Yeah. First time she was doing long jump, she jumped 15-7. By the month later, she was jumping 16. By sectional, she was jumping 17 in the 8th grade. And now she's a senior and she's jumping almost 22 feet. But everybody about 5 years ago who thought it was their time, and then she came out. Oh, yeah, and she running like 683 in the 55. She running 11s in the 100. She had like 24 in the 2. No, 23 in the 2.
Yeah, I think she hit 23.
I think she hit 23 in the 2. And she running, you know, guy times, high school guy times in 100, 255. And, yeah, everybody was like, oh, I can't wait till so-and-so graduate, and then she come up. And it's like, oh, still going to be second
kinda
or third.
Like, yeah, kind of similar, too, like. Sammy left last year, right?
Yeah.
And then Vanessa Watson comes in and
Kind
of takes that spot.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be the next?
It happens all the time. So it's just like you always have to be prepared, you know, whether it's your team or the other team. And, you know, we see it as coaches, too, because sometimes we're like, okay, you know what? This is our year as a team. You know, this person graduated. We were outmatched in this field event, and these couple of running events, they graduated some people. We got everybody back. It's our time now. But then you didn't know that the sister of that person that graduated happens to be just as fast and was playing soccer and lacrosse last year, decided to do track, and hey, guess what? I'm fast too. Or we had this year in our area, baseball player. He decides to run track for the first time. He's a senior. Ends up being the second fastest in the section in the 300. You know, we have the Bryson Spratling story. Those of you who know Bryson Spratling from Pittsburgh and USA Track and Field, we know him the high school version, where he was a high school senior who was too old to play AAU. So he said, oh, I guess I'll do track. Ended up being state champion in the 400. Ended up getting the full ride.
46
in high school. First time out. Didn't do indoor. Senior year. Outdoor track. First time ever. He was like 20... too low, 21 high.
I thought you were about to say his age. Like, damn, couldn't be that old.
No, I'm talking about 200 time. I think he was like 21 high.
Yeah.
He was like 21.9, 21, something like that.
Sounds
about
right.
About 10.9 in 100.
Yeah.
46 in the 400. Split 152 at states in the 800. Had never run track before. It was a basketball player. And then ended up getting a track scholarship. Go figure.
Hey, I'm not trying to be a hater. But you guys ever seen him run?
Oh, he had a double Dutch arm.
In high school?
He knows it, too. He know he had them double Dutch arms. We used to find him about that. Double Dutch arms will walk you down.
he's kind of the same thing. I mean, he wasn't a young stud, but it was like at the state level, you got all the veterans – we're like looking at that state championship title for like the 400.
And then there's this guy.
Yeah, and then there's this guy comes out of literally nowhere.
Nowhere, literally.
Nowhere. And now it's like I can't even get a state title because of this dude.
Yeah.
So it'll happen.
Yeah, at every level. At your level, at your school, you know, in your area. Or sometimes not until you get to the stage. You might be following, like, the national ranking to say, oh, you know what? So-and-so graduated. I can't wait till Tia Jones graduate, you know? And it's mine. But then, out of nowhere.
How about this? Oh, yeah, he graduating. Nah, I failed. I'm back.
Check his birth certificate.
I'm back.
You know?
I still got another year of eligibility.
Yeah, that person you thought was a senior. But was really a junior.
And probably shouldn't have been running that junior year. Or I'm saying, you know, there's some dumb athletes.
Yeah.
Dumb students. There's a thing. That's a real thing. And if you don't really believe me, wait until later in life when you get a job. You'll really find out how stupid people are.
Oh, I'm laughing because it's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, it is what it is. But veteran athletes, there's a lot of things that you got to look forward to when you're coming into that new season, whether it be your 10th grade, 11th grade, senior year, you know. So always, my best advice, always come in with an open mind. Come in with a willing to work. If you're a vocal leader, don't be a barker, but be a positive, you know, enthusiastic, uplifting, motivating vocal leader. If you're not that vocal, that's okay. Don't try to be something you're not. But if you're a hard worker, just show your worth through your actions, you know, and people will follow. Especially, you know, if you're at practice on time, you're doing everything you're supposed to do, you know, maybe you're not vocal, but you're leading the stretches, you're leading the drills and things of that nature. You know, you might not be the one that talks in front of the whole team, but you can pull a couple people to the side and, you know, show them things like that. You know, just come in with an open mind, be positive, because the better the experience you have socially with your team, the more fun you have at practice, the more it's not going to feel like hard work. It's going to just feel like you're just coming to practice, you're having a good time. Oh yeah, we're working hard too, and we're improving, we're pushing each other. You know, that's my advice to the veteran athletes. You know, be vocal, but not a dictator if you're a vocal leader, or just continue to lead by example, you know. And always listen to your coaches. You got anything you want to add to that?
Nope.
Man of many words. Think we're about to wrap it up. Covered this. Make sure you holler at us. Hit them with the Twitter and the IG, Bird.
At Track Talk with us. My Instagram is at He is Ferdy, so it's my Twitter. I keep forgetting what yours is.
Mine is at Coach Harris TF on the Instagram. That's all one word. Coach Harris TF, TF for track and field. And on my Twitter, you can catch me at The Real DJ Rock. That's at The Real DJ ROC. Email us 585tracktalk@gmail.com. If you are watching us on YouTube and you have not hit that button below that says subscribe, it's a big red button, bottom right corner, right under the picture. If you're in full screen, take the full screen off real quick. Mm-hmm. Click that subscribe button.
Do it.
Make it back full screen because we're not done yet. We're still talking. And then you're subscribed. You'll get the notifications every time we post a new episode. You know, check us out. If you're, once again, if you're on YouTube, look below. We're in, you know, all our Twitter, IG, email information is there. The iTunes information is there. The SoundCloud information is there. The Google Play Music information is there. iHeartRadio coming soon. We blowing up. We in these streets. We trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. Track Talk, CH, Ferdy. You got anything else?
Nah.
Then we out.
Deuce.
Holla.